All right, welcome to Learn It From a Layman. I'm Carl Christensen here with Cameron Christensen and Matt. And Tim has once again found his way onto the podcast.
I am the terror that flaps in the night.
Yeah, that's true.
90s illusions are hip.
Okay, so we're going to do a job-based podcast today, and I'm going to let Matt take charge of this one. So go ahead, Matt.
I am so excited to be in charge of this one. Okay, so all of us out there, we all have different perceptions on how the world works, and sometimes we realize that our perceptions and reality are not wholly aligned. At least that's how I imagine much of the rest of you work. I realize that I'm infallible, and so I'm unaware of that kind of disconnect, but whatever. To demonstrate this fallibility in action, our objective today is to discuss a couple occupations that people on this podcast hold and how other people who are also on this podcast perceive the work involved in those occupations. Anyway, and we will start with Tim. Tim teaches some grade, 7th grade, 6th grade. He teaches a grade.
Right. Yeah, junior high. Teaches some 7th and a right little now. Bit of 8th grade.
He teaches some subjects, possibly.
We shouldn't know that until he tells us.
Oh, okay, yes.
Adds to the intrigue.
Oh, there we go. So, anyway, Tim is a teacher. So, we're going to turn it over to Carl and Cameron. Please describe in your words and what Tim's job is. What does he do day to day? What are his challenges? What are his successes, his fears, his hopes and dreams, and also his salary, because we should discuss that too.
Well, more on fears, because I am a teacher.
Does he get paid? Okay, I'll go first. So I know a little bit about what Tim does. I think we all, listening to this podcast, obviously have had some experience, at least from one end of the teaching profession, the learning end. But yeah, so Tim is a junior high school Spanish and computer professor, though his degree is in English, so go figure. Okay, so I think he teaches mostly 8th grade, though it could be 7th. Who knows? And so I think most of his day is filled with despair and sadness. And I want to picture Tim's working environment. So his classroom, so there's two things that inform me what Tim's classroom looks like. First is Tim himself, I think, would be kind of a a pragmatic type teacher, where the things on the walls would be, you know, instructive and useful in teaching. So I would imagine some on the Spanish for Spanish classes, you'd have like important Spanish words, phrases, like little chunks from important Spanish documents or something along those lines. And for computers, I have no idea, but I also know that Tim has 5 sisters, so I think that they would have influenced him. Additionally, Tim's wife would have had some say in his working environment, and therefore give him some grief if he didn't also make it a bit entertaining. So I think there's probably also lots of doilies and decoration.
doilies,
yeah.
Willies are big in education.
Okay, and I think, yeah, so Tim teaches, I believe, 6 or 7 classes. I don't know. You get a prep period. I know that, given that we had some experience with our parents teaching. So, the prep period is used for crying. mentally and emotionally preparing yourself to deal with these preteen adolescent angst filled nightmare sessions that are classes. I think that Tim spends a lot of time trying to inspire, and probably before work usually spends time watching like, you know, Freedom Riders or, you know, those types of really inspiring teacher movies so that he can get, you know, which, pumped up for the day.
Which are very accurate and true to life.
I think so. I think that's, well, of course. Okay. But yeah, that's, and then I think Tim gets paid peanuts and occasionally cashew.
Sunflower seeds.
Yeah. And let's see, is that about it for what I think Tim does? Computer classes, I think it's, well, this is, I would be condescending to talk about computer classes, so I won't. And I'll just assume that Tim does a good job teaching Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel. And
I actually do.
And that is my picture of what Tim does. So
very much looking forward to talking about what we think Carl does.
Okay, so Cameron's on.
All right, I'm going to agree with almost everything that Carl said. I was going to throw in, you know, scary pubescent to, you know, pupating, you know, children. Also, I think PowerPoint is probably mixed in with what he has to teach.
Indeed.
And he probably has a computer lab that he goes visits for that class.
What are your thoughts on how Tim spends his summer?
I think it's ridiculous that he only has to work, you know, 6 months of the year. So,
yeah, I didn't. Also, I didn't mention what I think Tim's hours. I think now that he's married and much more mature, he probably gets there on time. as opposed to the back in the college days.
I guess, yeah, you were living with me my first year of teaching when I was routinely staying up past 2.
That's correct. I remember those days.
You guys don't still do that?
But yeah, so I think Tim gets there on time, which probably means somewhere around like 7 in the morning, and maybe 7:30, and then usually stays... let's see, if school gets out at like 3, probably stays till 4 or 4:30, gets home around 5, and then has some grading and counseling sessions, not for like work that he does, but the help that he needs.
For how he's being downtrodden.
Let's try to keep it somewhat positive here.
Well, we are talking about education.
Anyway.
All right. So,
Tim, do you have any confirmations or rebuttals? The life of a teacher is, as we see it, is pretty nice. You get to go to a place where everyone appreciates you all day, where you're paid lavishly for only working a small fraction of the year. Yeah.
That's right. Well, yeah, I mean, you guys are spot on. And it's a deep secret in the craft that we don't want people to discover what a good gig teaching is, you know. Otherwise, people will come in and take our jobs. So,
there we go. We should probably put out the disclaimer for anyone who might tune into this. One, what were you thinking? Two, most of us come from a family of educators, so we do have a deep seated teachers.
Both of your parents.
Do you want to tell us about some of the realities of teaching and what your days are like and some of the challenges and some of the successes you face?
Yeah, so I think most people have at least a general idea because everyone went to school. Some of the things that you might not know about teaching from just being a student. I do get to work around 7:30 in the morning and leave, you know, generally a bit after 5, you know, give or take. This last week was parent-teacher conferences, which meant I left school at 7:30 at night.
Yeah.
Spent a lot of time meeting. So that's something that a lot of people don't realize, that you have spent a lot of time, you know, meeting. You have what's called IEP meetings, where you meet with parents and students with special scenarios that maybe need a little extra consideration. You have, you know, discipline meetings and that kind of thing. A lot of the planning and prep work that goes into teaching, you are doing kind of quietly in your room before and after school. You know, just whacking away at, you know, making this practice or hashing together this lesson or prepping these materials for, you know, for the next day if you're me, or, and if you're better planned and farther ahead on things, maybe for next week. A lot of time grading. In fact, I've been grading a stack of quizzes as you guys have been talking. So you take that kind of thing home with you a lot of times on weekends and evenings. Do it during your lunch. One thing that people don't know about teaching is lunches stink. You get half an hour. My last school was really bad. It was half an hour from bell to bell. So you had 30 minutes to, you know, rush in, heat your food, shovel it down, and then rush back and anything else you wanted to do during your lunch. This school is positively a paradise because I get 38 minutes for lunch. And so I find, if, you know, people talk about, oh, why do teachers complain and stuff, and, you know, they got long summers. One of the things that I think just makes teaching a bit more of a drain is one, you're ruled by your bell schedule. And so, you know, just the kids are coming. And if you're not ready, well, too bad. You can't call and say, hey, I need another half hour or whatever. If you need to go to the bathroom, well, tough. You're just going to hold it. So things like that, it's just kind of a, I think a lot of professions, there's a little bit of that professional courtesy where, you know, okay, if, you know, now again, I may be wrong, but, I feel like nothing is more stuck on the schedule than teaching. And that can be a draw. And the other thing, of course, that people don't really think about is just the challenge of dealing with a room full of adolescents can really be draining. Not only because people think, oh, teaching, yeah, you go and present your material. It's not so much about knowing your material. I mean, you need to, of course, but the real challenge of teaching is how on earth to make, you know, 30 kids in a room at once actually care enough to engage and try hard things, especially when a lot of them haven't been taught resilience and independence at home. And so they're coming in already kind of, anyways. And I could go on and on and on, but there's a little snippet for you.
So do you find it frustrating that you have to follow certain mandates or like ridiculous stipulations the state puts upon you? Like for
the short answer would be yes, because there are, you know, lots of, I feel like the layers of bureaucracy and education kind of dilute resources and distract. I do feel like sometimes those things become kind of a red herring. So people, for example, people go off about all this standardized testing is ruining our schools. It presents some problems, to be sure, but a good teacher is going to go in and teach, you know, what they know needs to be taught regardless. Standardized testing can be a headache and a burden, but it's not the problem. So, yes, but I, you know, sometimes people spend too much time talking about that kind of stuff and not getting at the real root problems that challenge education.
What would, if you could narrow it down to your top two and just succinctly, what would you say are the root problems or the greatest challenges that you face day to day in being a successful teacher, in actually getting knowledge and positive influence into a child?
So I'll use my own personal experience to illustrate the first challenge. The school that I was at, for about the first 11 years of my career was a pretty good school, kind of a middle of the road school. I actually feel fortunate to be there. I learned a lot and they took good care of me. However, there were some very challenging situations with just very difficult kids. You know, you'd have kids coming in with neither of their parents in the picture, you know, living in an orphanage, a lot of other kids just all sorts of challenges and problems, but, you know, coming in not really checked in to the whole idea of working hard to learn. And so teachers, we get this mixed bag classroom situation, and we've got to teach them all. They're all at different places. They're all working at different paces. And some of them are actively subverting your classroom. Some of them hate you just because you're a teacher, an authority figure, and an adult. What do you do with that? And I just think from last year, you know, some of these kids and I just killing myself trying to meet with them, work with them, follow up with them, you know, give them leeway when I could, and you know, nothing worked. And that kills you as a teacher because you're there to help the kids, but they've got a whole wide life of things that are going wrong, and you've got 1 hour with them in a day to try to make something right. And it doesn't always happen. That's one of the reasons why teacher burnout is such a real thing. Teachers go in wanting to help kids, and then kids sometimes throw it back in your face and make it really hard. And it's hard to keep going with that. I've moved schools and school districts this year. I'm now at a kind of an elite school, a college prep, where most of the kids come in really ready to work hard. They're bought into the idea of education, and it's incredible how much easier it is to work there. Most teachers aren't in the situation that I'm in now. And when I look at my stress level from last year to this year, it's a huge change. And just so much more sustainable. So that's one thing that I don't know what the solution is for that. There are some things that could be done to ameliorate the situation. And this will take me to point number two of why there are problems in education. That is just resources. In the education system, things are just strapped. Because of that, you end up with larger class sizes. Some of my classes last year got up to 40 kids, which is crazy. And, you know, even the smaller ones were in the 30s, and it's just a lot of kids to work with, and to deliver a good education, good feedback, good follow-up with it, it's just hard to do. You go to a private school, and you're going to see class sizes half that size, you know. But then again, if you threw a whole bunch of money at it to try to fix it, well, you would have to lower your standards for hiring teachers because there would be a shortage of supply. And so that would create its own set of problems. So it's a big, messy thing. There's my short answer.
So I appreciate you being concise and short.
Sarcasm.
Typical educator. Never mind.
I love to hear myself talk.
Yeah. So to end your section on a more positive note, could you maybe your top two, why you continue to be a teacher?
One is because I believe in what we're doing. You know, teachers, more than anyone except parents, I suppose, are tasked with passing on all of the good things that our culture has learned and figured out to the next generation, and that has value. That's worth it to me. It is fun to see kids learning, making connections, and when you challenge kids and they step up to it, whether it be in the content that you're teaching them, you know, a kid's learning how to express themselves in Spanish, for example, or sometimes just challenging them and, you know, for example, a kid who wants to give up, but you push him along and help him to finally, you know, figure that thing out or accomplish that task, and they see their resilience pay off. And, you know, hey, that's a life lesson that hopefully they will recall in the future when they face hard things. So those kinds of stories keep you going and help you to feel good about the job, even when you're wallowing through a lot of muck.
Well, hey, thank you, Tim. For what it's worth, we all appreciate what you do, honestly.
well, thanks.
Actually, everyone on this podcast, parents and grandparents, were involved in education all the way from elementary to graduate degrees in colleges as instructors, teachers, professors, principals, so on and so forth. So at least one of us kind of kept in the family business here.
That's right.
Totally.
And gotta say, vacations are nice. Those summer vacations do help.
There we go. So, in stark contrast, Cameron went off and did something that I'm not sure anyone in the family business has done. Cameron, do you want to give us just your job title?
My now official title is lead gallery host.
At what venue or location?
At the Hyatt Place in Lehigh.
Okay. So, knowing those three words, lead gallery host, and those other three words, Hyatt Place, Lehigh, Tim and Carl, what are your thoughts on what a typical day in the life is for a Cameron as a lead gallery host? We'll start with Tim, because let's just keep him going.
All right. So I do have one friend who worked kind of as a hostess at and so I'm trying to remember what she would do. I imagine a lot of what you do is kind of you face-to-face contact with people who come to visit, kind of being the face of the company and trying to help them kind of have a good experience, you know, answer questions, you know, orient them and that kind of thing. So I would imagine you spend some time, you know, talking to the people coming in, and then maybe you spend some time coordinating, you know, if gallery, I don't know if that's like food maybe. So are you like, you know, coordinating what's served and what's put out for, you know, people, you know,
get food from gallery. Are you thinking
galley? I think I'm thinking galley, like, you know, on a sailor ship. Yar, what be cooking in the galley? So I don't know. Maybe it's more gallery, like an art gallery, and you're like, you know, orienting people.
What district are you teaching again?
quiet you.
All right, I'll take a swing at this, though I'm afraid it'll be a swing and a miss. Okay, so I know, but Cameron in the past has told me he gets, or of course I don't know with his new position what exactly he touches or does, but he said in the past that he kind of gets involved in everything at a hotel except for cleaning, like housekeeping. So the unfortunate thing is I don't know what all happens at a hotel. I assume that there's some computer work, right, that you probably have to do some, obviously, when people check in, you got to make sure that their reservations are there, and that people rooms are assigned appropriately, and whatever else. So I assume you're going to do some of that. I do believe that, like Tim said, that I think there is some something to do with the food. So I'd imagine that not because there's lead gallery, nothing to do with the word gallery. All right, just. That happens at a hotel, and I'd imagine that you have some involvement in it.
I see him as managing the galley to serve the gallery.
I'd also imagine that you do help with, obviously when people come to the hotel, so you're probably helping orient people, give them directions around the hotel and around the area, and then obviously interfacing with the other employees at your hotel, making sure that jobs are getting done. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know much what else to what you might do. So let's stick with that.
My thoughts are kind of similar to what Tim said. Whenever you have significant events at the hotel, I would see you as being kind of the lead interface with customers. To make sure things are up and running, to make sure the galley is functioning well enough to meet the needs of whatever event, function, or thing is going on, that kind of stuff. I would imagine that you are one of the face-to-face interfaces with customers on day of and that sort of thing. How close are we?
You guys are pretty close about what I do, actually. So I am now the head or supervisor of all the hosts that are employed in at the hotel. So we use kind of a general term with host. Basically, what our duties are is to check people in and out, talk to them, help them with reservations. But I mean, it goes a little bit more than that. Since we serve food, our job is also to clean up the food, make sure all the tables are wiped down, stuff like that, kind of like what a hostess might do at a restaurant. So we do that. On top of that, I've kind of been cross-trained in everything. So I also will cook occasionally. I will run banquets, like, you know, all sorts of fun things. So I do a lot here. And I was actually in the running for assistant general manager, actually just a couple of weeks, but it went to one of the other employees that actually I took her position. So,
oh, cool.
I do quite a bit here.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like you just keep everything running.
Yeah, so I'm kind of a point of contact. We have some of our employees are better at things than others, but I've always been kind of one of the first point of contacts. If someone has a problem with their room or something like that, I am there to fix the problem, whatever it is, whether it be move the room, you know,
Do you ever distribute hardtack and jerky from the hold to the sailors?
Oh, gosh.
Arizona vacation. But I have been known to distribute some jerky from our convenience market.
Nice.
That's all right. That's how you win customers back.
That's right. Oh, so I come back to jerky.
Jerky on us. Sorry yes. that your pillow was dirty. You know, something like that.
So, top two challenges for your job.
Challenges. One of the, I think, the best things and worst things about the job is the challenges. The fact that there's new challenges every day, just because my job is to make the guest happy. And one of the challenges, if the guest is not happy, let's say they didn't like bacon and they wanted sausage, you know, that's pretty easy fix that I just go, you know, cook up some bacon instead of the sausage that day. Whereas another person might want something completely different, you know. They're so angry about that, they don't even let us get to that point where I can just make you something else, that you have to come at the problem totally differently. So it's one of the best and worst things about the job is the challenges that you have to do.
You've seen a wide variety of different things.
You would not believe the random stuff that happens at a hotel. A couple weeks ago, we had a bunch of Marines staying with us because they were going to a funeral in the morning, and they all got thoroughly plastered during the middle of the night, to where we had to tell them they had to leave the area and go back to their rooms. And I think that was about 2 a.m. Yeah. And on their way back to their rooms, apparently some of them blacked down. I don't know. Apparently there was puke all over the walls that our general manager had to come in and start cleaning because there was some other stuff that happened that the police had to get involved with that night. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk too much about that, but anyway.
It sounds to me like one of the challenges you have is a lot of, it's just unscripted. There's no protocol for what to handle, you know, who knows what you're going to have to handle the next day, and you have to just kind of play it on the fly.
It is a lot on the fly. It's not like you're teaching someone how to, you know, open a text box and, you know, type something in. You know, it's more like
shots fired, Carl.
I don't teach anyone anything, all right? It was directly at Tim.
I do teach text boxes.
You have to kind of understand people and how to get them to calm down and work with you. So there's a lot of stuff that you can't really be taught. Some of the things that you can't do is always smile, you know, always greet people. It seems like that would be an easy thing to do, but a lot of people can struggle with that.
So greatest rewards, benefits, things that make you happy about the job.
When people, honestly, it's when just people compliment me, just thank me for doing my job. Like, thank you. You're so hospitable. You really made my day. And even if it's like little things that didn't take any time, but they just, you know, they have a lot of appreciation for it. That's what really makes the job worth it. Just, you know, like tonight I updated someone's reservation. And that made them really happy. Another person called in and they got disconnected and I just called the person back, you know, after a couple minutes, and he was so happy that I just made the effort even just to call him back, you know, just something little like that can really make someone's day better. So that's kind of the enjoyable things that, you know, when they get a better day, from just little things that I did for them, that's what really makes the difference.
Nice.
Cool.
All right. Thank you. So that brings us to our final worker for the night. Carl is actually, Carl, would you say your job title and place of work?
I'm a senior software engineer at Madcap Software.
Okay, so Carl is Dilbert. so senior software engineer at Madcap Software. Tim Cameron, intern. What do you think that means? What is Carl's day-to-day life? What are his hopes, dreams, and fears related to work? What do you think about all that? And we'll start with Cameron. Go ahead.
I think Carl basically is a project manager and just oversees a bunch of different projects and just makes sure they're going at the designated completion date. So he'll check up on them, troubleshoot problems that they're having, kind of be, you know, just help them if they get stuck and things, give them suggestions, ideas. And I think he probably talks on the phone a lot. That's probably, I think, what he does most of the day.
All right, my turn.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So I see Carl kind of, you know, on the deck, swabbing it, making sure it's clean, maybe securing the rigging.
Not the galley.
And furling the sails.
We don't all work on a ship, Tim.
all right. So let me try again. All right. So I think, Carl,
but,
I know.
But yes, actually, that was correct.
Yeah, so go back. That's right. Ahoy. I know Carl works from home, telecommutes. And I've seen his computer, so I imagine Carl sitting on his computer, writing code. And I know that the code, like, it's linguistic stuff, so like processing, maybe, you know, writing programs that process, you know, spoken language, you know, software, and then I don't know, checking code and, you know, stuff like that. Running programs, typing and clicking, muttering under his breath, and that's so forth. True. And I also know that Carl spends a large portion of his workday playing ping pong at his office because he tells me so in a smug voice.
Okay, I'll take a stab at this. So as a senior software engineer, I imagine that if you're not a team lead, you're one of the key people on the team for different software projects, and I imagine that that's you know, whether it's coming up with a new program or refining an existing version, getting a new release out, you have different basically different projects with different timelines that you're always working towards some kind of release or deadline. A lot of your work, since I do also know that you work from home, a lot of your time is spent in virtual coordination or virtual team constructs, I would imagine. Or maybe you just do it all yourself because you can. Who knows? But yeah, I would imagine that most of your workday is spent with your computer working on a virtual team to prepare for some sort of release. your actual contribution being either code itself or supervision and coordination of a number of coders to come together to create a program or whatever release or version is coming up. That is kind of my thought.
Okay. Should I correct and detail?
Only if we're wrong, which we aren't.
Yeah, I feel good.
Go for it.
Okay, so you guys did have portions. I guess if I had to grade and identify one that was probably the closest to what I actually do, it's what Matt said.
Except you can't give grades because you're not a teacher. That's
right. This is pass-fail, chump.
Well, in that case, you failed, Tim.
Dang it.
Wow, back to the galley with you.
Yeah, that's right. I'll go swab the decks now.
No, but so each of you have said, so I have overseen other junior software engineers in the past. Actually don't have that responsibility right now. So I'm not doing any of the coordination with the junior devs in order to give them assignments and things like that. Said that that has been in years past, some things that I've done, but not right now. So we do meet as a software team on different products. So I have a meeting every morning for one of our products. Actually, two of our products, but one I'm on full time that I meet with them every day. And then, as like Matt said, so essentially we have worked toward deadlines. We have what's called an agile development environment in our work. So we have iterations, which last usually for us, it's around a month, where we go through and get ready the next release. We fix bugs. We add new features to the software. So our software is technical documentation software. That's our main product, which it sounds boring and is only slightly more boring than it sounds. So the I'm not going to go into that too deeply. Just suffice to say that if you're reading help documentation, it's possible that it was written on our software. I also do the translation software that goes with it for our company, so that's where Tim is correct. I do sometimes get to work on those types of things, though it actually has little to do with natural language processing, significantly less than I wish it did. But yeah, so let's see. Yeah, I mean, that's my day-to-day is mostly code, honestly. And so, yes, I am one of the key developers for features on our main products, and I'm the lead on the translation software. So, yeah, honestly, I spend most of my day coding, and that's we do Microsoft programs and cloud programs where we use Microsoft Stack. So it's very technical. The thing that is the reason I actually enjoy, I guess I'm jumping the gun, Matt's supposed to ask me this, but
Sorry, go ahead and tell us about the things that you find most challenging and that you also enjoy the most.
Okay.
In reverse order, since you started with the things you enjoy.
Okay, so what I really enjoy is the logical solutions to issues. I mean, these are, you can imagine riddles and logic puzzles, and that's essentially what you deal with on a day-to-day in coding. You have to get in, understand what's going on, understand the whole environment, and then solve. So it's somewhere between a math problem and a riddle.
It must be nice to have problems where there is a definitive solution rather than, you know, trying to teach a student who doesn't want to learn.
Yes. I find the code is far more mature and less angsty. But yeah, so I like the logical side of things, the ability to solve these issues, to come up with real-world solutions that I can implement myself. And to contrast that, I did used to do some IT work, which I find a little bit more... it's dependent on hardware, which means less logic based and more just trying to figure out why something's broken. I don't know. It's hard to explain how they're different, but they are. And then working with my coworkers in this profession, you get a lot of logical people, as you can imagine, analytical thinkers. And so it's kind of fun working with these people that think the same way and have very, reasonable minds. And so when you're talking about something, you can
as both attract all the other professions that people have that are just full of irrational, off the wall. That's what you're implying, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Wow. To be the views expressed on this podcast do not reflect my views, and I want to make that never mind.
Good coworkers that really understand where to take things and how to solve problems, and it's enjoyable for that reason as well. So as far as challenges go. It is the case that because I work from home and in general in the software industry, because there are deadlines and because you work on a computer, people just kind of assume that you can work whenever, which is the upside and downside. There's an incredible amount of flexibility, but because there's a flexibility, sometimes you have to work late. And by late, I mean, there have been times in the last couple of years where I've worked until midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, just poring over code, trying to fix stuff. In order to get stuff done by a deadline, you're working some weekends sometimes. Now, that used to be the case more at my company. Now we've really been able to streamline things better, set better goals and dates. That's kind of more of a startup environment, is these hours and hours that you spend getting ready for a release. We're more of a mature company where we now have more resources we can bring to bear and more realistic time frames for things. But once again, just being available all the time means people assume that you can jump on whenever and be available to until 8 or 9 or 10 at night in order to solve a problem that's pressing. So that's kind of one of the downsides. And then I don't know if there is another downside. Oh, well, I guess so for some people, it's not as social as you might want it. Like Tim said, I used to play a lot of ping pong. I work from home now, so I don't. But outside of even when I worked in the office, if you didn't play ping pong, you don't interact with a lot of people. Your face is in the computer, you're solving problems, you're writing code. When you're coordinating with people on calls, it's really very focused. It's just, here's what we're trying to do, this is how we're going to do it. It's not a lot of chat. It's not a lot of interpersonal skills. It's just, this is what we're doing. Let's get it done. So that can be a downside for a lot of people. It kind of is what you make of it as far as being able to find time to actually chat with your coworkers. So.
Well, we've gone through teacher. We've gone through lead gallery host. And we've gone through senior software engineer. Hope you all learned something, maybe, about the ups and downs and the challenges and benefits of all these different careers. And with that, we will see you next time, or at least you'll be hearing our voices next time. I don't know.
Anyway. Adios, muchachos.
Yep, I'm off to the galley.
Ahoy.